Rob Spingola speaks, and we have been discussing the Skokie March, and I do have another audio that I would like to play. So, Dan, why don't you go ahead with that? Now, tell me about your travels a little bit more. You've been to all these countries. Now, did you fly? I think I saw a picture of you on the internet in a plane, and it looks like you were in the driver's seat.
Well,
or the pilot's seat.
Right. Well, I used to fly. I don't anymore. It's really expensive, and the insurance is crazy, so I don't fly anymore. But yeah, I did some flying. And actually, I would save my money, as I said, and I had to make it last as long as possible, so sometimes I would just have to walk for great long distances too. But that's the real way you got to see things. I think that the more primitive one's mode of transportation, the more one was able to see. I never went on Club Med or anything like that. I really traveled on the cheap. I would go only to the archaeological sites. That's all I was interested in seeing. So they were not vacations in the sense that you would just kick back and relax. I saw many wonderful places, but mostly it was to examine and to find out things that I had learned about in the books. I visited Egypt. I've been to Egypt several times, the Nile Valley. I've seen some places that I think many people have not got a chance to see, especially when I was in Japan. I've been to Japan, I guess, 7 or 8 times, and I've had some wonderful friends over there that have shown me places and things that even very few Japanese even know about. So I was very privileged to have some really wonderful colleagues over there. But there's many places I haven't seen, to be sure. I've not yet been to Panop, which is this marvelous island in the Pacific in Macronesia. It's a real miraculous place. It's a collection of 280 billion pounds of magnetized basalt that somebody assembled a long time ago. It's also not well known. The Crystal City. Very interesting. Never been there yet, so not many things yet to see.
Well, good. So were you like the doctor in the Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Well, I think he had more money than I had. I was traveling out of I was eating out of my backpack most of the time. I did have my adventures, that's for sure. I got chased out of the Casbah in Tangiers in Mexico, and I had some other run-ins. I had some interesting times, yeah, for sure.
Okay. Now, you became a professor of world archaeology at the Savant Institute of Japan in Osaka.
Uh-huh.
So I'm assuming that you did not go through the regular channels to achieve this position?
That's absolutely correct. No regular channels to get to that. The Savant Institution is a respected institution in Japan. But it is open to people that they feel, regardless of their educational background, need to have a voice. So.
All righty. All righty, and we are back. I actually could not find any reference to the Savant Institute in Osaka. It is spelled S-A-V-A-N-T, and it's probably I just didn't look hard enough, but I did not find it. So. Recapping, just before we go to the break here, he traveled all over. It's amazing how many things that one individual could engage in during apparently the same period of time. I find that very incredible. But hey, you know, maybe I just don't have that much energy. Alrighty, as I mentioned before, we will take calls later in the program, but please wait until I open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. Stay tuned. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and And we are talking about the attempted Skokie March. And remember, we will take calls later in the program, but please wait until I open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. We do have one last audio that I would like to have Dan play. So here we go. Let me just ask you a quick question. You indicated earlier that you believe that these ancient artifacts provide scientific evidence that trumps popular, long-held, accepted beliefs. There are many other areas in which people have readily accepted theories because of their pervasive media popularity. Now, you may have heard me announce the debate that I'm hosting about the Holocaust on Friday. Would you apply the same principle of scientific evidence to that issue?
I think the scientific method has to be applied to everything. It's something like the Holocaust, of course, is such a an emotionally charged issue. It's very difficult, but nonetheless, I think that a dispassionate view of anything in history, there shouldn't be anything in history, I think, which should be exempt or made special from this regard. I think, yes, of course, the Holocaust bears scrutiny just as anything else does. It's a shame, I think, that maybe too much emphasis has been placed on that. It's been dramatized too much. There certainly were other Holocausts that other peoples have suffered over time, and they should be granted their legacy as well. So I think that I believe in leveling the playing field, yes, most certainly.
All righty. Let's take a call. Let's take Maurice in Atlanta. Maurice, welcome to the program. All right. He thinks that we ought to have a level playing field, but when he was preparing his pamphlet, he said, and I quote, "I hope they're terrified. I hope they're shocked because we're coming to get them again. I don't care if somebody's mother or father or brother died in the gas chambers. The unfortunate thing is not that there were 6 million Jews who died. The unfortunate thing is that there were so many Jewish survivors." And Dr. Philippa Strum wrote this in her book, and so we have a pretty good source for that information. Okay, so this this was basically a three-year-long psychological operation with full media coverage, and it is a perfect example of a typical controlled opposition maneuver, all coming from a supposed Nazi. There appears to be several objectives. Number one, to impose Holocaust guilt on the American population, because remember, it wasn't just the Chicago media that covered this situation. It was known nationwide, and there were also people in other countries that heard about this. Number two, to reiterate the figure of 6 million dead Jews. Now, at this time, in 1976-77, there were certainly sufficient scientific evidence that the Holocaust and the 6 million figure were, in fact, a fallacy. Okay, number three, to reinforce the gas chamber myth. And, of course, those same records, which we're going to talk about briefly, had been published, evidence had been published, and so there was plenty of scientific evidence to level the playing field. Number four, to employ the hated Nazi symbolism, the swastika, to justify government repression on freedom of speech. Number five, to deceive the public into thinking that anyone who criticizes or questions Jewish control is surely a Nazi, just like those crazy Nazis who marched in Skokie. And number six is to associate, in a very, very subtle way, homosexual behavior with the Nazis. Number seven, inasmuch as Colin also targeted blacks, it created racial tensions between whites and blacks. Now, I have an 8-minute video linked to today's date, a part of which Dan played for us already. That was a segment of the History Channel presentation about free speech in which they described the Skokie event. They never once mentioned that Colin, the organizer of the Skokie March, was a Jew. Now, of course, I remember the History Channel may as well be called the Hitler Channel. At the end of the segment, they alluded to the fact that authorities had arrested, tried, and incarcerated Colin for sexually molesting a couple of young boys. He served 3 years of a 7-year sentence. Again, they concealed his ethnicity and by their silence maintained the illusion that he was just another typical homosexual Nazi. The Orlando Sentinel reported on February 15, 2007, that a paid FBI informant organized the neo-Nazi march a year earlier through the streets of Paramore that stirred up anxiety in Orlando's black community and fears of racial unrest that triggered a major police mobilization. And remember, this guy was paid by the FBI to organize a neo-Nazi march. I guess by 2007, maybe people were just forgetting about how terrible the Nazis really were. As Jewish writer Leon A. Jick, J-I-C-K, has written, and I quote, "The devastating barb, there is no business like Shoah business, is, sad to say, a recognizable truth," unquote. Let's evaluate some of the things that happened in the 70s, just before or just after this Nazi assault on Skokie. I do not think that anything happens in a vacuum, as I mentioned earlier. If you were to take a survey to determine the percentage of people who believe in the official version of what people refer to as the Holocaust, you would find that the majority of people believe that Nazi Germany deliberately exterminated 6 million Jews in gas chambers. It is because of the massive propaganda in the movies, television programs, and the acquiescent, greedy politicians who promote the story. The Jews know how to work the crowd. They know how to work a room. They know how to work the government. They know how to work Congress. They know how to work entire populations because they control the media. They control Hollywood. They control television, the television entertainment industry, and sit on the boards of the companies that advertise on those programs. They know how to infiltrate radio networks, the educational system, and they control what we believe about history. Now, in 1976, Professor Arthur Butz, B-U-T-Z, wrote The Hoax of the 20th Century. Well, what an appropriate time to have a march on Skokie to counter this. A few months later, David Irving, in his book Hitler's War, concludes that Hitler did not order and did not even know of any extermination of the Jews. He says, the incontrovertible evidence is that Hitler ordered on November 30th, 1941, that there was to be no liquidation of Jews, unquote. That is from David Irving's book. In May 1977, according to the Metropolitan Star, Howard Weinstein, the New York Regional ADL director, arranged two influential programs at the Church of St. John the Divine of the Episcopal Diocese of New York and at Trinity School, one of the major private schools in New York City. The Southwest Jewish Press of March 18, 1977, printed the headline, "Big Parley on Holocaust." It described how, and I quote, "Nearly 400 Christian and Jewish scholars met in San Jose in February for the first West Regional Conference on the Holocaust," unquote. The article boasted that a Catholic layman served as the executive director. It further quoted the Reverend John Polakowski of Chicago's Catholic Theological Union as saying, and I quote, "Our scriptures may be the source of Christian anti-Semitism," unquote. Polakowski cited Donald McEnvoy, the vice president of the National Conference of Christians and Jews, who said, and I quote, "Christians bear so much responsibility for the Holocaust, which fed on the church's centuries-old contempt for Jews," unquote. McAvoy, perhaps endearing himself to the Jews, blamed the Christians for the alleged 6 million deaths while leveling criticism at the Christian Gospels. Jews maintained that without Christianity, there would be no Holocaust, unquote. According to the San Diego Union, April 14, 1977, Dennis Prager, then director of the Brandeis Institute, warned an audience of 150 people at the Jewish Community Center that there would be a new Holocaust. He claimed that without Christianity, there would have been no Holocaust. Christianity laid the foundation for the Holocaust, and it may well give us another Holocaust, unquote. Now, Dennis Prager is a well-known mainstream radio host, and he is Jewish, and he has a very interesting past. He wrote something about morals during the time that he had a gambling problem and couldn't stay out of the casinos. So apparently, well, that's the gist of it. All righty, we are going to a break in a few seconds, and when we come back, we will talk more about how those darn Christians did that terrible thing to the Jews. Be right back in 3 minutes. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna. And I'm going to read just a short section from Michael Collins Piper's new book, The Caiaphas Complex, and this is Missile 2, and it is The Truth About Columbine, an Anti-Christian Act by Christ-Hating Jews. Now, the reason I am reading it at this point is because of the things I gave you just before we went to the break, wherein Dennis Prager said that Christianity laid the foundation for the Holocaust, and it may well give us another Holocaust, unquote. Alrighty, Michael says, after the tragic mass murder at Columbine High School in Colorado, and this occurred on April 20th, 1999, the media was rife with stories that two young anti-Christian men who were said to be neo-Nazis and admirers of Hitler were responsible for the crime. In fact, one of the young men, Dylan Klebold, K-L-E-B-O-L-D, was actually a member of a prominent Jewish family out of Columbus, Ohio, and by all indications, the young men were not working to advance the Nazi agenda by their crime, but rather they were acting out seeking revenge for the Holocaust that the mass media had told them was the consequence of the Christian religion. In effect, by killing Christians, they were getting revenge for the Holocaust. That fact, of course, was suppressed by the mainstream media. What follows is a brief letter to the editor that I wrote to my hometown newspaper trying to bring out the facts, not the myths, about what really happened at Columbine. The prayers of all Americans go out to the families of the victims of the vile anti-Christian hate crime that was committed recently in Littleton, Colorado, at Columbine High School by Christ-hating fanatics. Yet, what is so amazing is that the national media, which is always talking about hate crimes, has yet to acknowledge that this crime was indeed an anti-Christian hate crime. At first, the big media announced falsely that only blacks and Hispanics were targeted, and this was even before all the bodies were recovered. And then the media said that the two killers were young Nazis. However, when it was discovered that one of the boys was from the wealthiest and most powerful Jewish families in Columbus, Ohio, the media began to shy away. In fact, as the body count shows, quite a few of the victims in Colorado were Bible-believing Christians, and quite a few people have begun to figure that out. A few newspapers, such as the Rocky Mountain News, which is right on the scene in Denver, and a few others have mentioned this, but only in passing. And don't forget, at the previous school shooting in Kentucky, the victims were actually praying outside the school. The question is, why is the media not telling people that these were, in fact, anti-Christian hate crimes? After all, every time there is another kind of hate crime committed, there is a major national media uproar. But when a non-Christian kid goes gunning for Bible-believing Christians, the media doesn't call it a hate crime. Something's wrong here. However, here is what is interesting. They did not allow prayer in Columbine High School after the gunman started firing. Nobody got sent to the principal's office for praying in school. But before the shooting, if someone had whipped out a New Testament, there would have been hell to pay. After all, you know, prayer isn't allowed in public schools. It just so happened that the Columbine tragedy happened right around the time that that Mike was in Columbus, Ohio on a speaking engagement at a local high school and at a public forum organized by his publisher, the Spotlight newspaper. By eerie coincidence, an agent of the very local Jewish community organization funded by the family of the Columbine killer Dylan Klebold showed up at my forum and tried to disrupt it. He was an American veteran of World War II, non-Jewish, by the way, who got up and started crying about the Holocaust, even though the topic of my discussion was Israel's role in the JFK assassination conspiracy. In other words, because the Jews had suffered during the Holocaust, he was suggesting it was anti-Semitic and inappropriate for me to talk about the crimes of Israel. In this instance, the JFK assassination. It wasn't the first time something like this has happened to me, and it wouldn't be the last. As I told the people at the time, I suppose I should be glad that Dylan Klebold wasn't in Columbus visiting his family. He might have decided to come and shoot me. Okay, so that's the way that the media operates. Okay, going back to 1973, and of course the Christian issue, and the revenge that these two so-called Nazis had against Christians who were, as Dennis Prager said, and so many other people have already indicated, it's because of those darn Christians. Now, in 1973, Christofferson Roeder wrote a German-language 22-page booklet entitled Die Auschwitz Lüge. I know I pronounced that wrong. In 1979, the Liberty Bell magazine announced the English version. The magazine advertised it as, and I quote, the book that made the Jews so mad they had to invent the movie Holocaust. They published, unquote, they published and distributed more than 100,000 copies in five languages. In 1978, Franklin J. Schaffner directed The Boys from Brazil, a British-American thriller film suggesting a sinister and bizarre plot to rekindle the Third Reich. It was based on Ira Levin's 1976 novel. In 1978, NBC broadcast the TV miniseries Holocaust in four parts, a total of 475 minutes, with numerous well-known actresses and actors, including Meryl Streep, who was also in Sophie's Choice, James Woods, and Joseph Bottoms, Rosemary Harris, Michael Moriarty, Sam Wanamaker, and many others. The series won two Golden Globes, eight Emmy Awards, and another 14 awards and 11 nominations. Robert Berger produced this mini-series. All right, we're taking a three-minute break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Alrighty, I was talking about the miniseries. It showed in four parts. NBC produced it, and Robert Berger actually produced the miniseries. And at that time, because of this series, about 200 members of the authentic National Socialist Party held a demonstration against the miniseries in front of the NBC office in Chicago. Despite the fact that it was a much larger group than Collins, the media totally ignored it. Yet Colin could hold a meeting with a dozen attendees and the media. Even the national media would report it. He could sneeze and they would report it. Now keep all this time frame in mind. On November 1st, 1978, President Jimmy Carter, via Executive Order Number 12093, appointed Elie Wiesel as chairman of the newly created 34-member Commission on the Holocaust, which began its operations on January 15, 1979, to evaluate the establishment and maintenance of an appropriate memorial to those who perished in the Holocaust. Now, remember, all these things, nothing happens by accident. I know that people say that that FDR said this, but I, as I mentioned, I do favor the conspiratorial view of history, and I believe that things are planned. And when you look at timelines, and I've become really big at timelines lately, but when you look at the timelines, you think, my gosh, okay, that whole thing, that whole fiasco, which lasted for 3 years in the courts, in the Supreme Court, and this could possibly be the result. That the United States government officially recognizes this and basically creates Holocaustianity. So the commission began operations on January 15, 1979, to evaluate the establishment and the maintenance of an appropriate memorial to those who perished in the Holocaust. Five congressmen and five senators were and still are part of the commission, along with a 27-person advisory board. Okay, so five of the congressmen and five senators basically function on this commission. They functioned then, they function now. I mean, this seems very biased, if you ask me. For financing, the commission was to examine the feasibility of obtaining funds for the creation and maintenance of the memorial through contributions by the American people. Okay, so first they're going to make us feel really guilty about it, feel really guilty that the darn Christians didn't stand up and say something about this Holocaust, when in fact at least 55 million people died during World War II. And so they're now coming to the American people for money. Further, the commission shall recommend appropriate ways for the nation to commemorate April 28th and 29th, 1979, which the Congress has resolved shall be the days of remembrance of victims of the Holocaust. On April 24th, no leveling of the playing field here, right? On April 24th, 1979, in anticipation of the commission's report, the government held the first national civic commemoration in the Capitol Rotunda with the address delivered by President Carter. Currently, the U.S. sets aside an 8-day period from the Sunday before Yom HaShoah to the Sunday after Yom HaShoah. Congress established this period for remembrance programs, ceremonies, and special educational programs with the participation of states, cities, and military ships and stations. Officials hold the annual National Civic Commemoration in the Capitol Rotunda. The United States official at the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum provides support material materials linked to an annual theme. In other words, they create a theme, and then the whole country follows this theme. Through the long-term efforts of a Navy Jewish chaplain, Rabbi Arnold Reshnikov, the Department of Defense began participating in the remembrance of victims of the Holocaust. On April 1, 1984, Defense Secretary Caspar Weinberger would sign a memorandum to the military services urging the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and other military commanders to participate in the annual program for the first time. The Defense Department has produced a resource guide for military programs. The DOD guide contains the history of the DRVH, a sample ceremony for military installations, and materials that groups could use in their educational programs and ceremonies. Well, I guess the military should be commemorating the Holocaust, in as much as the military is actually fighting the wars for the Jews in the Middle East right now. So I guess that might be appropriate. I don't know. The DOD divided it into 8 sections: the liberators, the horror, the process of annihilation, bystanders and collaborators, including probably those Christians, the response, resistance and rescue, the shadow, and America remembers. Now, the committee also had 3 objectives. The commission joins with the U.S. President in urging the Senate to ratify the Genocide Convention. The commission wanted to punish the criminals of their choice involved in the genocidal activities of World War I. Number 2, the prosecution of Nazi war criminals in America. The commission wants the government to grant high priority to the investigation and prosecution of Nazi war criminals in America, ensure adequate funds and staffing for the Office of Special Investigator charged with the prosecution of accused Nazi war criminals in our midst. And number 3, and this is relevant to the debate that we had last Friday, Jewish cemeteries abroad, and I quote, "The commission recommends that in recognition of the sanctity of the physical remains of the Jewish communities of Eastern Europe and the right of the dead to a final resting place, the State Department should continue to express its concern over the destruction of cemeteries, urging that officials maintain them in a suitably respectable manner, unquote. In other words, officials would not allow an investigation of any alleged burial sites as it would desecrate sacred ground. All righty, I think we'll go ahead and take some calls. We do have some people that are wanting to call in. Okay, so to fund this National Museum, the Commission recommended a public-private partnership to include large individual contributors, foundations, associations, institutions, corporations, civic organizations, churches, and synagogues. Because of the size of the project, while it is largely non-governmental, the funding must involve a national effort. Everybody will get on board with this. Therefore, the Commission wanted a land grant and government status to symbolize federal commitment. In other words, the commission wanted the U.S. government to grant land to them, which they did. It's by the Washington Memorial. Okay, let's take a real quick call. Let's take Richard in Washington. Welcome to the program, Richard.
Yeah, Deanna, I'm one of your loyalist supporters, but I'm having a little trouble with this program. I the information is relevant, but I'm trying to figure out exactly what goal is that you're trying to reach with this kind of roundabout discussion.
Okay, I think that this program should be listened to at least twice, or maybe more. What I am trying to indicate is that a three-year period of time during the 70s, a propaganda operation took place in Skokie and in the Chicago area that basically, let me scroll back up here and tell you what it actually did. Remember, propaganda always has a definite objective, and there were several objectives to this propaganda. And you also have to understand the attention that the media gave to this while ignoring other groups. Number one, to impose Holocaust guilt on the American population. This three-year program that was widely publicized was to impose Holocaust guilt on the American population, to reiterate the figure of 6 million dead Jews, because basically what you had a Nazi that was saying, we killed 6 million Jews. Okay? Number three, to reinforce the gas chamber myth. Number four, to employ the hated Nazi symbolism, the swastika, to justify government repression of freedom of speech. Number five, to deceive the public into thinking that anyone who criticizes or questions Jewish control is certainly a Nazi, just like those crazy Nazis who marched in Skokie, to associate homosexual behavior subtly with the Nazis. And inasmuch as Colin also targeted blacks, it created racial tensions between whites and blacks. It was a big propaganda operation that was very successful, given the things that happened within a 2 or 3 year period of time right after that, including the U.S. government officially organizing a commission wherein they would create the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. It is official. It is a United States operation. Wherein five of our congresspeople, five senators participate on this commission. They participated at its founding, and they continue to participate. And the U.S. taxpayers are paying $47 million a year to have this official U.S. Memorial Holocaust Museum function. Where's the museum for some of the other people who died in World War II? And the other objectives, as we get down to the committee, was basically to sanction the U.S. government to go after anybody that they deemed to be a Nazi war criminal in America. They also decided that Jewish cemeteries abroad or any place where Jews are said to be buried, that officials would not allow an investigation of those alleged burial sites because it would desecrate sacred ground, which basically covers their butts. So that no matter if there was a crime committed, which they say there was, You can't prove it.
Yes. Okay, I'm seeing that information as being, you know, really good information. Just, I'd ask you a favor. I did a two-hour show with Melody over on Oracle last Saturday. I'd hope that you'd take a hear of that. And why? What I tried to do on that show was relate to the people that are doing, as you call them, the conspiracy, as inbreeding sociopathic tribes. That takes all the religious aspects, the use of the words like Jew and Nazi and whatever out of the whole situation. We all know that Washington, D.C. is one of the three centers of power. It's a military arm for these inbreeding sociopathic tribe. So that's completely understandable. And people that are getting sucked into that realize that, our government is nothing more than the military arm. And the people have nothing to do with that. So other than giving us that information, which I appreciate, I'm trying to figure out what you're trying to accomplish knowing what you just said.
I think it's an educational program. My goal is to educate. And when people were taken in by this apparently planned operation, it changed a lot of things, just as the 60s changed things.
Well, just like 9/11 did, too. But can we stop these people that are in control? Do you have any quote-unquote way?
You can only stop them if you know what they've done. And you can only know what they've done by looking at history, whether it's just recent history or whether you go back to the Civil War or whatever, wherever you look at history. You cannot stop them until you educate yourself to the point that you know specifically what they have done. And they have duped the U.S. population and have imposed guilt on the U.S. population. And in order for us to unshackle ourselves from their control, we need to know what the heck they've done. That's my purpose.
Well, that have unshackled myself, and I figure there's only two solutions. One, you can kind of become a hermit and stay out of the system as much as possible, totally withdraw and not give your support to the system. And two, you can do the Clint Richardson, Walter Burian, and try to take over your county at the local level and establish your own bank, as Catherine Austin Fitz and Ellen Brown have suggested. Other than that, I think, you know, we just have to watch the show, because the show has been going on so long, probably for thousands of years, ever since Alexander the Great started his machinations.
I kind of deal with more recent things, and I really appreciate your call, but we do have some other callers. You know, I think the answer is education, and of course, learning what we can do. And I know that you have a lot of really good ideas.
I've been a listener, but I was really kind of confused with this one.
Well, I sometimes tend to be a confusing person. Listen to it again, and maybe it'll help unconfuse you.
Okay, listen to Melody's show. I'd appreciate it.
I will. Thank you so much, Richard.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All righty, let's take Greg in Florida.
Dan,
Greg?
Can you hear me?
Yes, welcome.
Hey, I called in last time. Is Frank Joseph and Frank Cohen one and the same?
What do you think?
Well, it sounds like it.
yes, if you listen to the program again. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that.
Well, I called in before talking about the Tocobaga people that lived in the Tampa area.
Yeah, all right.
He was on talking about the ancient Americans.
Yeah.
Now, how does that all relate? What's he trying to do there?
It doesn't relate. It just means that people can repattern themselves and come back in a different in a different body, apparently.
So you don't think he had some agenda?
Of course.
Well, but what is it, do you think?
Well, they're really good infiltrators, which I said in my presentation today. That is one of their greatest skills is infiltrated training. I mean, there is a legitimate science with ancient American artifacts and all of that, and I do intend to bring people on the program to talk about that, because there obviously is some interest in it. And I personally believe that that history did not start on this continent in 1492. So.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I'm just wondering what do you think he's up to?
I don't know. You'd have to ask him.
Yeah, okay.
He contacted me. He opened the bag of worms. I'm just...
Yeah. Well, you're doing a great job exposing them. I appreciate it.
All righty. Thanks, Greg. All right, let's take... okay, we're going to a break. When we come back, we'll take Charlie in Seattle. We'll go ahead and take Charlie in Seattle.
Hello, Deanna.
Yes, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the research that you've been putting into this. I was busy with something while you were talking about cemeteries abroad. Could you go, like, fill me in on that?
Right. That was part of the commission's objectives. In order to, let me just scroll down so I can get, and it was their, basically their third objective. The first objective, of course, was to be able prosecute, second, they want to prosecute, the criminals of their choice, involved in the genocidal activities of World War II. Number three, Jewish cemeteries abroad, and I quote, this is a quote, "The commission recommends that in recognition of the sanctity of the physical remains of the Jewish communities of Eastern Europe and the right of the dead to a final resting place, the State Department should continue to express its concern over the destruction of cemeteries, urging that officials maintain them in a suitably respectable manner," unquote. They consider the ground near many of the labor camps to be cemeteries where Jewish victims are buried. And so, in other words, officials will not allow an investigation of any alleged burial site as it would desecrate sacred ground, so therefore officials will not allow the uncovering of scientific evidence to disprove or prove obviously to prove that there weren't any bodies there, because if somebody has committed a crime, as they say that the Nazis did, they would be very willing to prove it, to level the playing field, so to speak, to allow officials to see just exactly how many bodies are there. And to do some autopsies.
Aside from that, I wanted to tell you that there is a bureaucracy in Washington that's, I don't know if it's the State Department. I mean, I guess it would be included in the State Department, but they're maintaining Jewish cemeteries. They're maintaining Jewish cemeteries that have nothing to do with the Holocaust. They're just where there were shtetls and villages that have, where the occupants are no longer living there anymore. And I ran across this information a couple of years ago. I haven't been able to get back to the government page that I found it on, but it's a commission of mostly Jewish individuals who recommend a certain amount of taxpayers' money be used to maintain these Jewish cemeteries. And I found that really odd, because it has next to nothing to do, I mean, it has something tangentially to do with the Holocaust, but it's not, these cemeteries and memorial sites are not anywhere near the camps.
Interesting.
And
I'm sorry, Charlie.
Yeah.
We have run out of time.
Oh, okay.
Thank you for calling.
I'll see if I can't find that information for you.
All righty. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All righty, listeners, thank you so much for joining me today. It was kind of a different day, and I'll talk to you tomorrow. Take care.